to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Did you know that when a human being is forming in the womb, the heart starts beating before the brain develops? We all know how important our heart is to our physical existence. We can't live without it. Science is now determining what our early ancestors knew but couldn't prove scientifically, that we literally could not exist without our heart on many different levels, spiritual as well as physical. Our heart sends out more messages and more energy than our brains. My guest today has brought science and spirituality together in a new film, a documentary called The Sacred Journey of the Heart, and we'll be talking about all the incredible things that are in that movie. I'm Eileen Dillon, creator and host of Full Power Living. Welcome to the only show on international media that regularly works to transform our world by exploring the power and importance of human emotion. Please join our conversation today. We have a chat on Blog Talk Radio, one on emotionalpro.com, and a toll-free number, 888-498-0570. 888-498-0570. My guest today is Rana Prince. She's founder of Modern Mastery, founder of Global Wholeness Corporation, intuitive counselor, coach, workshop leader, and inspirational speaker, and she's also the writer and producer of Sacred Journey of the Heart, a film about the science and spirit of our connection. As an intuitive counselor and coach, she guides people to sacred sites around the world, and she's also a songwriter. She's created the step-by-step personal growth process that she trademarked as Modern Mastery. And that takes people through the process of transition and creating a new reality that aligns with each person's unique talents and dreams. Teaching workshops throughout the USA, she's a certified radical forgiveness coach, an Aura Soma practitioner, and a licensed teacher of the Institute of Heart Math. She teaches their tools and techniques. Very accomplished. Rana, welcome to Full Power Living. That's very impressive.
Hi, thanks. Thanks, Eileen. It's great to be here today.
Great. Well, on this show, for quite a while now, we've been talking about the radical changes that are occurring for humans and for the world, including the breakdowns and the fact that we're going through a transformation. And in your film, The Sacred Journey of the Heart, you're addressing all of this. And ultimately, as I read it, what you're showing us is that the way through the transformation is through the heart. And so I thought we'd start by what you've learned about the human heart that is important for our transformation.
Well, that's a great summary. I wholeheartedly agree that that's really the solution to getting through these tumultuous times. And I've learned so much about the heart in producing the film. It took me 3 years to make the film, and I'm sure we'll get into that a bit later. But so I can summarize, you know, the most important thing I learned about people in general, and this is a generalization, is that there's a lot of misunderstanding about this, you know, working with the heart and what it means. I learned to really kind of clarify, we have three levels of the heart, that at least in the work that I'm presenting, that I'm talking about, the physiological heart. So I learned, number one, that the physiological heart is so much more than a circulatory organ. And you know, there's part of the endocrine system, it excretes hormones. And so it has been reclassified in the medical system as part of the endocrine system also. And it also has, as part of the it's neurocardiology, so there's a heart brain, an actual brain in the heart that communicates more signals to the brain than the brain sends down to the heart. As we say in the movie, it's not even a close call. It's 80 to 90% of the signals that go from the heart brain to the brain go up from the heart to brain. And so I learned a lot about the physiological heart, and then, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I know that there are pretty staggering heart attack statistics where men and women are catching kind of like on par now, you know, as the leading cause of death is heart attack. And so then I thought there's a connection between this heart attack issue and the heart disease and the repression of emotion. So the second part, I really learned about the emotional heart, and that's a lot of the work with the Institute of Heart Math that I've become certified in some of their programs and learning about that when we use the heart's power to regulate our emotions, we really are sending encoded emotional signals out into the field around us. You know, hundreds and, you know, depending on how you measure it, you know, multiple times more than the brain. So I learned a lot about the regulation and the mastery of the emotional heart. And then the third part that I learned about the heart is the intuitive heart. Some people would connect that with the spiritual heart or, you know, the intuitive heart, but just that inner whisperings of the heart that really knows the truth. And you can't really get to that third level of heart until you work your way through the emotional heart, where most people get stopped. And that's the confusion that's out there. That's just painful to do this heart stuff. And so I'm really enjoying helping clarify the fact that, you know, the intuitive heart is where the real power is. You just got to work through some of these emotional issues first.
Well, I totally agree with that. My son actually gave me the nickname of the emotional pro. I've been working with emotions for many, many years, led there because I had such a huge anger issue from my own childhood, and I determined that I needed to end it so that I could, you know, if it was possible, to stop being run by anger so that I could actually engage with life. And I found out it was possible, and it took me many of the places that you talk about in the movie. Now, you know, I had an experience some years ago. I was running a group, and something happened in the group, and I had this theory that when we humans come to the earth, if we find the conditions not hospitable or dangerous, what we do is we tend to close down first those things which are nearest and dearest to us, those that, you know, like our greatest talent. And as I was watching the movie, I thought, you know, what we actually do is close down our heart first.
Yes,
I never actually saw that. Would you be in agreement with that?
Yes, definitely, because our heart is where we really feel the pain. I mean, we feel different emotions, as I'm sure in your work that you talk about. You know, we feel like a lot of us feel anxiety in our stomach or fear, you know, blocked in the throat. But we feel this pain in the heart. And so we, you know, it's a natural human instinct to protect and just to shut down the heart center to stop from that pain. We don't have many tools as a child, most of us growing up, to know what to do with this pain. So we just shut down and say, well, I'm not going to feel that anymore. So that's, for me, that's the definition of closing your heart down. You're just not going to feel emotions. You numb out. And then later on as an adult, if you want to, as you said, experience joy and engage with life, you just have to go through this process of unpacking that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was part of your goal in making this movie to let people know that it's safer and safer all the time to unlock their hearts, to be vulnerable in that way again?
Well, I would say that's like the second or third goal down the road. The first is just to help people understand that, you know, the heart is, like Greg Braden says in the film, the heart is where the action is, because we've been taught from an early age we're rewarded for our thoughts, and most of us have been punished for our feelings. And so we've been living from just this, you know, from the ideas of the mind. And so it's really in the paradigm shift that we're in, is that we've got to get back in connection with our heart. And then, you know, the next step down the road is that, yes, it's getting easier. More and more people are talking about it all the time, and that was a very important goal then. At the end of the film, it's presented in 7 chapters, is here's some suggestions on how you do it. So the movie isn't just a lot of talking heads talking about things. We say in the whole last chapter, here are the tools and the teachings of the heart. You know, find what works for you. No one size fits all, but there are many tools and techniques out there, and we're just encouraging people to take some steps and try some things on. And it's not as scary as you might think.
Right. Right. It was nice to see Greg Braden on your film. He's been on my show. And my son, 26 years ago, my son and I, when my son was 14, took a course on the Tree of Life from Greg in somebody's living room in San Francisco. So it's really great to see how far he's come. You know, that's really great.
Yeah.
So, but we really can't afford to keep our heart closed down anymore. One of the things that I've noticed over the years is there's no point in telling lies anymore, because where we're going, the truth is revealed. You can't hide anything. And the same would be true about the heart. You're not going to be able to be in the world that we have coming up if your heart is closed down. So we can't afford to do it anymore, can we?
Well, we can't, because the health implications alone are very high. The cost of staying in a closed down heart and repressing and blocking emotions. More and more people are aware of the medical, you know, the scientific studies, and I believe one of them came right out of Harvard, is that, you know, the correlation between, you know, repression of emotion and disease, like cancers and other incurable diseases. And, mm-hmm. you know, and then what the, so I don't want to get on the thing about what the medical community does. They're doing a lot of great things out there. But if we choose not to go into the emotions and healing the heart and opening the heart, the cost is high. And I think we, you know, they're going to be those people who are going to hold on to the old paradigm, kicking and screaming until they say, this just, there's no way this is working. And so one way or the other, we're all being led to this this path of living wholeheartedly and living in the path of the heart. And I think people will see, as more do it, it's going to become more accepted, and people will get more comfortable with it than they are right now.
I'm really excited about that. Mm-hmm, so yeah. A big part also of what you're doing with the film is you're letting people, or you're showing people, how the science and the spirituality have come together. I think it's Greg Braden that points out that science has only been around for about 300 years, and the spiritual connection or understanding of how the heart works has been around for centuries, more than that. But still, we need to bring them together, and you show both sides, like when you bring in heart math versus some of the indigenous leaders.
Yeah, that was an important part of the film that developed as we went along, because I started the film project really just wanting to dive into the spirituality of the heart and that sort of the metaphysics. I was going to do a very, you know, sort of what I call high-level metaphysical spiritual film. And then as we got into it, and Greg Braden is one of the early and strong supporters of what I was doing, he suggested we go talk to the people at HeartMath. And then I started to realize, wow, this is everything that I knew or intuited about the power of the heart and the role of emotions to lead us into the solutions that people are finding we can't think our way through. Everything that I intuited and believed spiritually has been documented and proven scientifically about how we're interconnected, and that was the main point, is that the spiritual traditions have said, of course we're interconnected. We've known that for thousands and thousands of years. And now, because you Western scientists can prove it, doesn't mean that hasn't been true all along. So it became an important part of the film to show that more ancient tradition and the science that's bridging it, that helps those of us who have come from the world of rationalism with René Descartes, I think, therefore I am. That's going to help, I think, a lot of us in the Western mindset bridge the transition between the head and the heart and say, this is something I can understand scientifically. Now let me start to see if I can apply this to my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was impressed with the report that if I stand next to you, my brain registers your heartbeat and your brain registers my heartbeat. That is so... Yeah. Clear about how interconnected we really are.
Yeah, it is, and we know, and a lot of us have experienced the heart's intuition, and it's definitely the heart that's sending these encoded emotional signals all into the entire area around us, because most people can relate to the fact they're standing in a room and somebody comes in and they don't necessarily see it, but they get sort of like a gross feeling. You know, it's like, ooh, what just happened? And then you turn around and here's a person that comes in with, you know, what Eckhart Tolle calls a heavy pain body, or they're angry. And that is encoded right in the signal. It's not, you know, some sort of a, you know, metaphysical thing. It's a physical reality. We are impacted by those sorts of signals coming from someone else. And the exciting part is, when we learn to master the power of our own heart, we can change the emotional reactivity of somebody else, and I've experienced that many times myself.
Can you give us a hint how you do it?
Sure. I'm working with the Institute of Heart Math, and I'll give you an example. It's a small one, but you know, it's not like a life-changing thing, but this is how simple it is. I was one day getting a manicure, so a lot of people do that and can relate. So here's a Vietnamese young girl giving me this manicure, and she's shaking and going so fast and just not talking to me, not looking at me. And I'm thinking, oh, she doesn't even like me. This is going to be terrible. So I was having all these negative thoughts sort of engaged in wherever I was coming from. Then I said to myself, hold the phone. I know how to do this. And I didn't say a single word. And I went into this place that it was called Heart Coherence. I focused on my heart. I slowed my breathing down, and I started to just generate a feeling of gratitude from my heart without saying a single word, just grateful that whatever happened with this manicure, I was grateful that she was here providing a service to me. And within 30 seconds, she started talking to me, and I hadn't said a word yet, and explaining to me why she was working as fast as she was, and she started smiling and laughing. The whole thing changed. And, you know, that's, and so I use a small example like that, but we can have the capacity, and Greg Braden has shown it in his demonstrations with that he talks about apparently a French man was in a presentation who was all angry and agitated, and the whole room dropped into heart coherence led by Greg, and this man had left the room because he was mad about something, and then he actually came back in and said, I don't know what happened, but I feel better. Because everybody was focusing on this man and his anger, and they changed his own emotional signature coming from his heart, and he came back in. And so we have the capacity, because our heart signal is so powerful, to stand in front of someone who's angry without saying a word, engaged with their eyes open, focusing on this emotion of gratitude and just appreciating that they're here, and it changes. It's a phenomenal process and a practice that you can use in your life and start to become a contributor to what's happening on earth, as HeartMath calls it. Instead of a detractor, we're either a net contributor to bringing more compassion, more understanding to what's happening on the planet, or we're detracting because we're not harnessing the power of the most powerful organ of our body, which is our heart.
Wow. I really like that. That carries forward something I used to teach in a class. I would use kinesiology with putting your arm up and trying to push it down, and
right.
I discovered that a person thinking negative thoughts about somebody could detract from their strength in their arm. Mm-hmm. And if you thought positive thoughts, the strength returned. So it's really great to know what the thought is.
And the same about yourself. I'm sure, you know, if you're thinking negatively about yourself, my co-producer, Dr. Donald Backstrom, is a chiropractor and does this all the time, all day long with people. And he finds that most people that he muscle tests, you know, what percentage of the 4 billion bits per second of information running in the background of your processing, your biological processing, are positive? Most people test in the range of about 1 to 5% and is positive. And that's pretty astonishing. And we just finished up a big online telesummit, and I also interviewed Dr. Bruce Lipton, who you may have had on your show. Biology of belief. And so, you know, so Dr. Backstrom saying about 5% of muscle tests of people are running positive thoughts about themselves. Bruce Lipton said 95% of the shows run by the subconscious, which is largely negative programming installed in our childhood. And I'm like, well, wow, that's a pretty powerful correlation. And so we can start to use the power of the heart to shift that, to have those, you know, the 4 billion bits per second start to come up, you know, what if we're working on 5% positive, what if we get to 50? Our lives will absolutely change. So, and it's the heart's power that does that, because in our mind is where all that programming from childhood exists, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Following this program, we're going to have a half hour with a woman, Sonia Rechnitzer, who actually helps people to identify and change those beliefs by contacting higher selves. So, I don't know if you have time to join us, but certainly I want you to do so, talking to both you, our listener, and you, Rana, if you have time. It might be fun. You know, one of the things that was really powerful in the movie that really stood out to me was the story that was revealed about Nelson Mandela, who was imprisoned for life by his country, and was a very angry person when he went in, by his own admission, and made a heart shift while he was there that enabled him not only to get out of jail, but to become president of the very country that had imprisoned him for life. That was an astounding. What did you learn about how we shift from that story?
Well, I learned, that story was told by our film's narrator, Mary Morrissey. And Mary was in the delegation of people who went to South Africa and awarded him the Gandhi King Peace Prize. And so Mary heard that story directly from Nelson Mandela's lips and told it in the story. And I learned, and I think the viewers learned, that it's about a choice. He didn't do that by accident, because he said, you know, day after day, he just sat there, you know, like it's over, it's over, it's over. And finally, he had to make a choice to say, well, what if it's not over? And the choice is reflected in the film as a shift of perspective. You know, so I could have stayed in my own victim story the whole rest of my life and simmered with, you know, you talked about anger. I wasn't even experiencing, allowing myself to experience anger. Nelson Mandela was an angry man. I was a repressed angry person and then resentful, you know, and that was spilling out everywhere. So we each have to make a choice about, are we going to go into those experiences of our past that are somewhat painful to unpack them, as we say in the film, the Anais Nin line that Mary also says, unpack the pain of staying bound up in the bud is so much greater than the temporary pain it takes to unpack that and expand into a place of greater connection to our world, and then the capacity to have an impact like Nelson Mandela did on the whole course of human history, and that has to come from a heart-based choice.
Right. The question that really struck me was he asked the question, what if the imprisonment that I'm having is part of the ending of apartheid? And right. What if it's part of the process? And then how would that be accomplished? And it seemed to me that's something we can all do in our lives. You know, what if this experience that I'm having, this job that I've lost or whatever, what if that's part of me getting to a better place, me changing the course of my life, me doing something different that I've never even thought of?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the perspective shift is so important, and that we really talk about that thoroughly with the section on radical forgiveness, where I describe and put Colin Tipping in the film, because that was a turning point for me. You know, what if my childhood abuse that I suffered for 10 years is part of what I'm really here to teach and becomes the greatest gift? And so, you know, whether it's, you know, being imprisoned, I was living in a form of imprisonment, which was in the imprisonment of my own resentment, of holding on to the, you know, repressed anger and even some hatred for what I'd experienced. And I think most people that are living in, you know, trying to figure things out from their mind and saying the past is behind me, I'm not going to think about it anymore, you got 95% of your consciousness, subconscious, unconscious, being run by the patterns of the past, whether you want it. And I call that imprisonment. Many of us are in prison and don't even know it, because we're trying to think our way through things, when the real gift comes in the alignment of the thoughts and the feelings and the willingness to go into the places of the past to free yourself from, you know, from those self-imposed, what have become self-imposed prisons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it finally occurred to me, being angry with my perpetrator, because I also was abused sexually as a child. You said 3 out of 5 are. That's amazing. It finally occurred to me, and it was a very primitive way of getting it, that as long as I stayed angry with him, he was getting me twice.
Right, yeah.
Right?
Right, yep. Yeah.
So we have a question on the chat. Could Rana share about her own interconnected heart journey and her learning to trust her heart to lead the way?
Oh, that is a great question, because for, you know, anybody who's really gone through abuse or a betrayal or something, you know, that causes a lot of heartache, learning to trust again, I think, is one of the most challenging parts of this journey. And so, you know, part of it was going into my journey was, first of all, being aware that I had so much repressed and stuck emotion, and it wasn't just in my heart, as you know, different conditions in the body. I was experiencing like migraine headaches, you know, that's a clear indication of, you know, anger that can't get out of the body, and it just like builds up into the head until mm-hmm. you're literally debilitated. I had that, you know, I had joint pains. And so I had to first be aware that I was really trying to just gut my way through my life with my head, figuring it out. And I became aware of it in watching the first edits of the film. So people that are online and want to look at on YouTube for Rana Prince, it's Rana with two N's, Rana Prince before and after, you'll see an actual depiction of what does it look like when you're not in your heart, because it was so stark. We had to re-edit the film and put this prologue on there that I said, this is what it looks like, people. I looked frozen and terrified, and you know, my skin was pasty, and I just looked completely different in the transformation. And so I had to find my own way back into my heart and to find out how to trust first the world around me, and then finally trust myself. And that first looked like being aware that I wasn't in my heart. I saw the depiction of myself on camera, and I said, this whole movie has to stop. I'm talking about compassion and love, and the only thing moving is my mouth. The rest of me is
right.
sitting there like frozen and terrified. And so then I said, okay, I'm aware. That's step one in my Modern Mastery program is awareness. I'm aware that my heart is nowhere near being open. And so then I started to call in. My process was always like, call in, you know, the next teachers, the one that is I'm ready for. And then I met Colin Tipping. I went through the process of radical forgiveness, which the key step for me after 15 years of psychotherapy on a couch, and it served a purpose, but it did not give me a process through which to deal with these emotions. Colin
right.
Tipping gave me that through radical forgiveness, and he says, and I think it comes from John Bradshaw, who originally said, you can't heal what you don't feel. And I didn't want to feel those things. And so I went in, but Colin gave me a way, beginning, middle, and end, to process that. And a lot of people who've gone through intense abuse, we feel like if we go into these emotions or into those stories or the things of the past, we will never come out of it. I'll start crying. I'll never quit. I'll be depressed for a year, you know. And so that was what was, you know, that was a defense pattern. So I went into this feeling those feelings again and then having that perspective shift. To see, oh, this didn't happen to me, this happened for me, for my growth and healing. And then day by day, I started to, you know, unpack those emotions and just the segments that I chose to handle. I was no longer plagued by debilitating flashbacks. And then just start to realize in my world around me, and this is one of the processes I teach, hey, I'm safe right now. And that's how I started to trust myself, because I had been running in that 95% that the world is an unfriendly place. That's what I learned as a kid. It's dangerous. And in trusting my own heart, I had to learn that right now where I am, I'm safe. Most likely I'm going to stay safe because I'm not drawing those experiences to me anymore. And so then I started to relax into the flow of my life instead of always being on guard. And that's, you know, kind of like a short version of how I learned to trust myself again. I'm safe, everything's good, I love my life. And so, you know, and I know what it means to be working with the full range of emotion, not just a little tiny narrow band.
Now, before the show, I was talking with my friend about trust. And you said you started being able to trust around you. My learning is that until I trust myself, I can't trust people around me. That the real loss was in being able to trust my own reactions or feel and trust what was going on with me, and that comes first. But I'm hearing a little different from you. What would you say about that?
Well, I just, from my personal experience, I had to kind of learn to trust the world was safe first, and then I realized, because I didn't think it was, you know, I was in a constant chronic hypervigilant state where I couldn't sleep through the night. Any smallest noise, I would, you know, jump, and so I kind of went the other way from the outside in, and then I realized, well, you know, until I really handle the trusting myself, then I'm going to continue to have some of these experiences out there. So it just, you know, was a constant reminder for myself, I'm safe right now, you know, and I can trust that, you know, I'm going to be safe when I get up in the morning. And, you know, you think you would know those things as an adult, but the programming was so strong, and I had gotten into a subconscious pattern of hypervigilance and chronic stress, and that's what you see on my depiction. I was under chronic stress, and you don't have to have suffered from, you know, abuse or trauma or something. Just living in the world today, most people are under chronic stress and don't know how to manage it. And,
right.
you know, and then it's hard to trust the world when everything's coming at us so fast. So it's not just about people with this type of background, but anybody who's living in the world. And I had to kind of learn it from the outside and then finally learn to trust myself. And then in lockstep, everything started to get a little more smooth in my life instead of fear-based, you know, more trust-based.
Right. Well, sort of along with this, I hope that when other people watch the movie, they'll have some of the experiences that I did, which is, wow, I have really been led in some places. Like you were saying, you were hypervigilant and didn't sleep through the night. Well, I had this experience. Years ago, my first husband left our family when my daughter was 10 months old, and within a week or two of his leaving, I started getting obscene phone calls in the night. And I would be lying awake, staring at the ceiling, imagining somebody coming in and stabbing myself and my small daughter, you know, and I couldn't sleep. And I finally got up one night out of desperation, and I had a talk with God. And I said, God, I don't really want to die at all, but I understand that that may be necessary, you know.
Yeah.
But I certainly don't want to die a violent death. And by the way, I don't want to be sitting up all, nights all the time protecting against it. So I'm going to turn this over to you. You keep me safe. If I have to die a violent death, that's the way it'll be. But in the meantime, I'm not going to worry myself with it. And that's when I started sleeping well.
Yeah, that's a good strategy, you know, turning to prayer and turning it over to a higher power, which, it was what helped me survive, you know, a really tenuous time and, you know, in my childhood, which was at 13 years old when the abuse stopped. And, you know, I had a very powerful spiritual experience because I was under the grip of chronic anxiety because there was no more relief from that, you know, fear of danger. And I don't know if you want, this kind of can be an intense topic, but when a abuse stops, then you don't have any relief because you're always waiting,
mm-hmm.
and it never happens. And so my body got into such even more intense anxiety that I developed a tumor on my spine, and that's a direct relationship between chronic worry and anxiety and developing a growth. And I couldn't tell anybody I had a tumor growing because the body was by that totally off limits. You couldn't talk about anything other than maybe a sore throat.
Wow.
And so I'm laying there at 13 years old in bed night after night for 6 months going, I'm dying and I can't tell anyone.
Oh my gosh.
Morose as all as you can imagine. I played piano and I'd do the silence like a cancer grows. I'd be playing that over and over on the piano, hoping my mom would say, why the heck are you playing that song? Of course, she never asked me. So in desperation that night, after 6 months and this thing's growing, I'm praying. I'm brought up Protestant. I'm praying to God, to Jesus, and saying, you know, I'm dying and I don't understand. And I could see that I was going to have, because I've always had a sense of clairvoyance and seeing things. I still do. I could see I was going to have 4 children and travel and do all these things. It made no sense. I'm like, how am I dying when all this stuff I think is going to happen? So this presence of light and indescribable, unconditional love came into the room with me and started to talk to me and said all kinds of things and just to the point where I was in tears. I had never, ever experienced anything like that, this deep peace, and just said, you're going to get up, tell your mother, get this taken care of, but we're going to call you when we need you in the world to make a difference. And when we're ready, when the world needs you and when we need you, you're going to have to answer this call. And I got up, told my mother, we got the tumor removed. It was benign, but it was certainly anxiety-provoking for me. And then, you know, 20 years after being a corporate banker and losing 2 more jobs in the finance world, I thought, okay, I think this is it. I never forgot that, you know, that I'm going to be asked to do something different. And that's how I just went from decided, okay, I work intuitively. I can see things. I know things. I can see energies, auras, all sorts of stuff. So now I got to do this big surrender and really step into the work that I was told at age 13 I'm here to do.
That's really great. You know, the other thing you point out there is something you covered in the film as well, especially in the physical area where you talk about this man you depict this man having a heart attack and where people have some level of crisis in order to start them on the road to heart opening. And that certainly was your crisis.
Yeah, that was at least one of them at age 13, because I had to go about, and you know, that was just the knowledge and wisdom I had, but I had to go about and, you know, kind of grow up and do the things I did. And most people do wait for the wake-up call, and but we don't have to. And that's what I think the real message is in the film, is we can start doing this heart-based work now to unpack those emotions, to find out how to use the power of the heart, how to harness that to create a different signal where you're contributing to the world, but also to a deeper feeling of, you know, being okay, trusting and safe in your own life, and being empowered to create change.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's one of the things that is mentioned in the movie, or is talked about in the movie, too, is what we owe to the children. I'm very interested in parenting. I've taught conscious parenting, and I'm working to learn about profound parenting now, which is to communicate directly with a child's soul. And you know, it's brought out that the children today are, you know, saying we're not going to go through all this all the anymore. We don't want to close down. We know who we are. We don't want to close down. And so we need to open ourselves so that we can connect with where the children who are coming to us these days are, and also so we can prepare and create this life that we are transforming into. Can you say a few words about that?
Well, I'm very passionate about that topic also with, you know, my four kids, and we have to be the leaders for them, but and sometimes they're leading us. I know when I get out, you know, when I get sort of closed down in my heart, my kids will always show me that, hey, Mom, wake up here. You know, it always has to do with when I'm stressed. But we have a responsibility, not just, you know, to the conditions here on Earth, but to the emotional, raising more emotionally intelligent children. I don't think it's happening in the school systems. They're still teaching the old ways. And, in fact, I think they're sort of clamping down on kids, and I have three boys especially, in trying to make them fit into the little box, where boys, you know, have a very different way that they need to learn. They're making them sit in chairs, and if they're not, they're medicating them. So I think it's our responsibilities as parents to become emotionally intelligent ourselves, and we're going to be leading by example. And, you know, if we're leading from a closed-off heart, our kids we'll find out directly from our kids, they will be struggling, because if we're closed down in the heart, our kids don't have any way to navigate their own stressful lives, and our kids will show us one way or the other, you know, we've got to show me something else different to do.
Yeah, that's really important. In the early 1990s, I wrote a series of manuals for parents to help them teach their children how to deal with emotions, and a few of them I've revised. They're called like the ABCs of anger and the ABCs of loneliness, that sort of thing, because I agree with you that it's really, really important. And, you know, what's important, too, is that we adults, by and large, for generations, we've clamped down on our emotions, and so we don't really have the tools, haven't developed them, and yet we need to have them for our kids. It's a great mutuality that we have. We need to open our hearts and our emotions so that we can help our children stay open with theirs.
Yes, we really do, and it's a process that we learn to master our emotions first, and then our kids will follow by example. You know, that's pretty much what they do. And the Institute of Heart Math has a program called Heart Smarts for school children, and a game for even for preschool children. And you know, so there's some hopeful things going on. Some of the more advanced schools are starting to incorporate heart training and emotional literacy into their schools, but not a whole lot of them, but it's out there, you know, with the work you're doing and mm-hmm. the Institute of Heart Math. I think there is, I do also have hope about it, instead of saying, well, it's just all doom and gloom. It's not. There's lots of tools and techniques that we can start helping our children, even as we're learning it ourselves.
Great. And I love this idea of games. Let me go back to radical forgiveness a bit. As I've worked with forgiveness over the years, I have understood it as letting go. But Colin, there is a word in Aramaic, which was the language of Jesus, that means that to forgive means to untie. And I love that. And then Colin Tipping, using the four steps of radical forgiveness, has created a game that you play in the movie, show us playing, called Satori. Talk about games and how those work, because this is really intense stuff, and you're you're going through a game about it. You know?
Yeah, and that's just one of the ways, you know, that you can work with the it's actually a 5-step process of radical forgiveness. The 5th step is the integration. So I don't think he ever got to that on camera, but I think games are important because they do have a middle, a beginning, middle, and an objective. You know, nobody exactly wins, but Satori means awakening. And so everybody starts in that game process and on the starting spot, which is victim land, poor me, poor me. And so I had found, you know, that to play the game of radical forgiveness and awakening to, you know, reframing the story and letting go of the victim story was so powerful. And I when I play that game, if anyone sees the film, you'll see I play it all out. I don't hold anything back anymore because I'm like, what am I holding back for? And I've you know, helped many people go through this process of the radical forgiveness game, and I do a radical forgiveness circle ceremony, which is very, very powerful. But I thought, well, what a better way to show that, you know, forgiveness can be it's a process, and we can walk through the beginning, middle, and end. And that is a very intense part of the movie. My story doesn't, you know, go through the whole movie. It's just in that chapter 2. But I wasn't acting. I was expressing a very intense emotion that I had learned in my spiritual work was a low vibration. I went back and forth until we finally left it in that I was expressing hatred. And anyone that's been abused, you know, even once, you're going to have that feeling. And if it stays inside and stays, you know, it's going to fester in the body. And so I show not just the expression of that emotion, but then what happens afterwards, how that untied me. To open up for something new and say, hey, my awareness, my perspective shift is nobody has power over me. Nobody can take the power of my soul away ever. It didn't happen then, it's not happening now, and it never will, because my soul is always, you know, creating these situations for my growth and healing. And so it was a really wonderful real life transformative process on the film that we showed. And it's a fantastic game, and people can get that on my website on sacredjourneyoftheheart.com. And you don't have to play it at that level of intensity either if you see the film. You know, I just do.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the way I would play it, too. You remind me years ago when I was married to my second husband, I became aware that I hated him. And I was holding that for 2 or 3 days, and he was sensitive, and he looked up at me and said, what's going on? And I said, well, I hate you. I hate the way you move your little finger. I hate the way you talk. I hate the way you walk. I hate everything about you.
Oh, wow.
And then I said to him, I realize that it's not just you that I'm hating. It's all the hate that's been in me toward a man for my whole life. But the issue is that it feels so good. I'm letting myself hate for the first time. It feels so good. I don't want to stop.
Yeah.
So he moved out. And while he was gone for 6 months, he let himself hate the women that he had hate toward. And then we got back together.
Mm-hmm.
It was very interesting.
Well, that's a powerful emotion that we're taught, you know, in the spiritual world, you know, that's low, it's low vibration. Well, the only thing low about an emotion is when it stays in the body and festers inside. And
amen.
It's just an emotion. That's it, you know. And so I learned through Colin's work to move the energy. So it wasn't so much about letting go of something. It was just moving the energy. And when I went through the radical forgiveness 21 days to heal my relationship with my mother, I got to that point where, see, I had done so much work in therapy and things on my father. I'd never really addressed my relationship with my mother. And I got stuck on about day 4, and I called my radical forgiveness coach and said, I'm not going to go any further. I need to be mad and hateful towards my mother for about the next 2 or 3 years. There's no way that this couple days is enough. And she said, well, that's fine. You can be mad and as long as you want, but just keep moving the energy around and just keep moving it. And it didn't take me 2 or 3 years. It took me another, you know, 3 or 4 days. And then I was able to complete that process.
That's what's so amazing to me. As you know, I'm 70 years old now, and I didn't have the tools that you're talking about. I didn't have the information. So it took me so much longer to do these things. And what you're opening up to people is that you don't have to swim in this stuff. You don't have to stay locked up, even for very long at all. Just turn your attention here and become conscious and aware and let the energy roll, and you'll be done.
And if you want to see what it looks like, look at the before and after the first 2 minutes of my film, because it's the picture speaks 1,000 words. You know, people say, "Well, what's the point?"
Yeah. It's amazing. It really is amazing. You're just glowing after you do the work.
Yeah.
So you mentioned in the movie about the possibility that we human beings were created to be feeling beings. And also the issue comes up that emotional awareness is the next frontier, the next level of human evolution. Talk to me about that.
Well, it has been my belief that, you know, feelings come first. And it's pretty easy to know that that's really true. You know, you look at an infant, they don't have a lot of thoughts going on in there. They're sensing beings, they sense things, and then later on we learn to attach a thought to a feeling, which then becomes an emotion. But we feel things before we think of what they are, and that's the, in a heart math they call that the connection with the amygdala in the brain in the fast track. So if we have an emotion of being afraid of a dog, and we haven't really unpacked and healed that through whatever technique, and you know, I'm a big fan of tapping too, and Psych-K is different modalities, but that emotion of fear fast tracks in the brain before we ever have a thought that comes in. And they've proven this in studies that they've done at HeartMath, where they'll flash up different pictures of things that are, you know, nice and pleasant and things that are scary, and the body reacts before the brain even has time to process that we've seen something scary on the screen. They can measure it in milliseconds. And so to me, that just shows that we're feeling beings first, and then we put a whole lot of rationalizations around it to rationalize what we are feeling, and then we have thoughts that come after it. And Deborah Rosman says in the film that initial persons doing research at HeartMath, she says, you know, she's the one that says emotional awareness is the next frontier, because if we can realize that we're feeling first and then we rationalize thoughts around it, if we go back to the feeling, we're going to make choices and decisions that are much more aligned with who we really are, with our purpose, instead of sidetracking and roadblocking ourselves the whole time. If we develop emotional intelligence, we're going to find, as I have, that my life flows a lot better. Things happen to me much more easier. I'm attracting a magnetic heart field. So not only the people that came into the film, like Greg Braden and Dr. Joe Dispenza, that's coming from the emotional awareness, the intention I put out into the quantum field, if you will, to create the film. But, you know, any project I do now, as I mentioned, this big telesummit I just completed, I decided, well, I want to take this work internationally. And so I started to invite internationally recognized speakers like Bob Proctor and Dr. John DeMartini and Bruce Lipton. And they all said, sure, we'll be on your project. I mean, I've done one film. They don't know me, but I created a magnetic heart field. I said, I know that this is easy now. And if I set my heart, this is a heart-based project, what we call the Science and Art of Opening Your Heart, and that's still available online. People can purchase these 20 audios that I interviewed, like Bob Proctor, Betsy Chassey, the filmmaker of What the Bleep. And they all talk about this process of opening the heart. And so if the film's not enough for you, you've got 20 hours more of material that people can look into.
Is that on modernmastery.com or sacredjourneyoftheheart.com?
It's on sacredjourneyoftheheart.com, and that event, the live event, ended last week, and we're just transferring all over to, you know, downloadable audios that people can look into. You know, it was a big project, but I created it not from my mind. My mind would have said, you're out of your mind. You can't do something this big. But my heart said, I know what my purpose is to help people live, open their hearts first. You have to do that. You open your heart. Then you can go into heart healing, and then you can go into heart empowerment. So those are my next two telesummit topics that will follow after this one.
Oh, wow. I want to keep track of that. Yeah, I learned that in doing this radio program. When I first started, I was terrified to ask anybody to be on the show. You know, who am I? I'm in my 10th year now, I've had the originator of HeartMath. I've had Bruce Lipton. I've had Greg Braden. I've had Candace Pert. I've had Dr. Jean Shinoda Bolen, you name it. These people say yes because they have a message they want to get out. And so I think that's important for everybody. You know, everybody has a story. Everybody has a message. And when you live it completely like you're talking about, it will come to pass.
Mm-hmm. And it comes to pass pretty quickly, I found out. Uh-huh. You mentioned that Nelson Mandela that story makes its way into the film. Well, my film was selected in the Sedona Film Festival, and I was standing there as crowds and hundreds of people streaming in to see the film, and there's a beautiful black man standing in front of me looking a little confused, and I said, can I help you? And he said, well, what's this movie? And I told him, well, this is my movie. And I looked down at his name tag, and it says Kweku Mandela. And I said, oh my gosh, are you Nelson? Are you related to Nelson Mandela? And he said, yes, that's my grandfather.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is what happens when you start creating from the heart. And I found out then, he's a filmmaker from Johannesburg and also had his film selected in Sedona, a wonderful film that you laugh so hard you cry with joy. It's called Fanny Fury's Labola. I like to talk about his film. But that's what happens. How did it happen that the universe put me in the front of Nelson Mandela's grandson, and so that my next film project, which is about teaching from heart, you know, I have a connection now with the South African filmmaker and the DeMartini Institute in South Africa. So we're going to do depict two young teachers and about how do we inspire the young teachers to become teachers of heart to make a difference in the classroom. That's my next film project.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow. I really hate to have to end this, but I think
to come back.
Yes, I would love to have you come back. Gosh, there's so many things we could talk about. Yeah, may I invite you to do that?
Yes, that'd be great. I love talking about my film, and it feels like we've just barely scratched the surface because we have so much in common in the message, and there's a lot more to the film than what we've even touched on today. So that's
absolutely. I mean, we could take different directions. So, well. Let me remind you listening that modernmastery.com and sacredjourneyoftheheart.com are Rana's websites where you can find all the wonderful things you've been talking about. Where can they see the movie, Rana?
Well, they can see it online now for the first time. Starting last week, we started streaming it online, so they can go to sacredjourneyoftheheart.com and you see the Streaming Online Now banner. You can watch the all-new trailer. We have a really exciting new trailer that we put up there. So let the trailer inspire you. That's how, you know, look at the trailer first. And you can stream it online or you can purchase the DVD from our website. And we'll be, I think in the next month or so, we'll be on Amazon. So it's getting out there, which is exciting. Yeah,
that's wonderful. Well, it's a wonderful, wonderful movie. I watched it twice. And this morning I said to my husband, who, by the way, is a retired surgeon, you must watch this movie.
Oh, God. Well, that's funny. I want to have an MD on my next telesummit, so I'll have to see where the universe brings that to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's been very interesting for me because I've been married to him for 15 years now, and I was laughing even when I came across something in the movie because as we were dating, he was a smoker, and I had asked him, I said, I can't stay with you if you smoke. And and he kept talking about getting married, but kept putting it off and putting it off. And finally I said to him one day, what is the holdup here? You keep talking about it. It's driving me crazy. You know, I was fine before I met you. I didn't need to marry anybody, but, you know, I am interested. And he said, well, you're asking me to change so much. And I said, really? I understand that stopping cigarettes after 30 years is a lot, but... And he said, no, you're asking me to change a lot more than that. And I said, what? And he said, you're asking me to become fully conscious. That's what.
Oh, gosh, that's great.
And I don't said to him, is this a bad thing?
Funny. Yep, that's what it's all about, you know, when we find the partners that are ready to take that step with us. And boy, as I have with my life partner, who's the co-producer of the film, and we are having the time of our lives. You know, we have the full range of emotion, and we have so much passion in our relationship, and I wouldn't have it any other way now. You know, I went through a lot to get divorced and then find this wonderful man that is as dedicated to consciousness and change as I am. So it's fun.
Wow, that's really wonderful. Well, I want to thank you for being with us here today and for all the work that you're doing. And I am at this moment in joy from talking with you. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Eileen. It's been fun, and I look forward to continuing our conversation.
All right. Good.
Yeah.
All right.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yes. Let me make a few announcements next week. We're going to continue talking about opening yourself to conscious living when I talk with world-renowned consciousness teacher and healer Dr. Richard Moss. He has a new book called Inside Out Healing, and Dr. Moss has been walking his path for many years, and he'll be here to share what he has discovered. And I also want to encourage you to stay tuned right now as we welcome Sonia Recknitzer, who is co-founder of accessing universalintelligence.com. She's going to be doing a Q&A session for callers who can ask whatever question they want and get answers from their own higher self. So be sure to join us next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, which is noon Eastern time, for my conversation with Dr. Richard Moss. Paul Johnson of Fresh Talk Media has been our producer. Thank you, Paul, for your work and support. And I also, Ms. Utter says, I want to acknowledge Rana by saying that both the movie and the telesummit are excellent, inspiring, and a blessing. So thank you, Ms. Utter, for your wonderful questions. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become. See you next week.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.